Good morning, everybody. June 24th, 2020 at 9 a.m. And we're going to go ahead and start our meeting. We're called to order at 9 a.m. Can I get a roll call, please?
Ms. Powell?
Present.
Dr. Bennett?
Present.
Dr. Knopf?
Here.
Dr. Guarino?
Present. I would like to recognize any newly licensed chiropractors that are in our gallery today. I appreciate you being here. I think you'll have a good experience and get a chance to see your board in action and some of the cases that come in front of us. I think it'll be very helpful for you. And so our first tab number one is a formal interview. And this is with Dr. Jeffrey Laufenberg.
Dr. Greeno, this is Dave Morrison. Good morning. I do not currently represent Dr. Laufenberg, as I have informed the board in a previous letter that I sent, I believe, in March. However, I do have information that I think is important for the board to hear, and so I felt I would voluntarily share that information with you.
Thank you.
It is my understanding from reliable information that Dr. Laufenberg is extremely ill, and that is the reason he has been non-responsive to not only my letters, but to any letters from the board. And so I would ask that the board pend his matter at least for 2 or 3 months. It is my understanding that he's been given a diagnosis that is terminal.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Ms. Williams?
You would have the option of continuing, motion to continue for however many months you believe, and then you can revisit it at that time.
Okay. I don't mean to seem like I'm not sensitive to this matter, but do we need any proof of what's happening right now in his medical condition?
That would be up to you.
I've tried to reach out to him on several occasions even before I terminated my relationship with him. And there was no response, and my understanding is it's because he was that ill. I can continue to try and at least communicate. Perhaps I can find a family member or something where I can get a confirmation from a physician if you need it.
I think it would be helpful if we had some type of medical document indicating his status and why he has not been able to attend our meetings. So board members, what is your pleasure?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'd make the motion to pen the matter for 3 months.
Dr. Bennett, second.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Excuse me. Do we need to make a friendly amendment to that to stipulate a letter of medical?
Okay. So Ms. Powell wants to know if the makers of the motion will consider a friendly amendment to also, in addition to delaying or pending this meeting for 3 months, to require some type of medical documentation as to the doctor's status. Friendly first and second.
Yes, I'll accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay.
As do I, Dr. Bennett.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. And so we will move on to tab number two now. In the matter of Dr. Syed Hosin, formal interview.
Yes, Dr. Guarino and board. This is a continuation of a case that was heard in October 30th, 2019 board meeting. There were a couple of delays with various issues, but At that board meeting, the board voted for forward this to the formal interview and add an allegation of failure to timely comply with a subpoena and another one to failure to comply with a board order. So in addition to the original five allegations, there's also those two, and the board brief is in your packet.
Okay, and is Dr. Hosen here too, in person or via Google meeting?
He's not signed in personally, and I don't see the screen.
Okay, so Dr. Hosen, if you are joined telephonically or if you are in the meeting, we cannot hear you and you will need to call the board office directly. So we will proceed.
Dr. Greeno, members of the board, if Dr. Hosen is not present to participate, my advice would be to move this to a formal hearing.
Thank you. Duly noted. So Ms. Williams recommends that we continue this to a formal hearing and continue the investigation.
I'll make a motion to move this to a formal hearing for further investigation.
Is there a second?
Dr. Knopf, I'll second.
Okay, and so we have a first and a second to continue the matter to formal hearing where possible revocation and other remedies may be considered. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it, and we will continue this to formal hearing. Our next tab is tab number 3 in the matter of Dr. Brendan Potter for a formal interview. Is Dr. Potter here?
Good morning. This is Dina Anagnopoulos, and I am counsel for Dr. Potter. He should be on the line. I know he was, he emailed me just a few minutes ago, and he was appearing today.
Thank you, Ms. Anagnopoulos.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
I am Dr. Brendan Potter.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Kolesch.
The board conducted an initial interview of this case in April 29th, 2020, and moved it to a formal interview, adding an additional allegation of inadequate record keeping and billing. These allegations were related to durable medical equipment, and Dr. Potter was required to supply the relevant records, and he submitted the two amendments that you have in your packet, including the previous board brief.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Kolesch. Ms. Anagnopoulos, would you like to make a statement on behalf of your client?
Yes, I would briefly, thank you. This matter originally arose after a patient made a complaint to Dr. Potter's office. She had had some back pain. She had just returned from a trip to Mexico, and she claims that Dr. Potter was responsible for a back injury. This, in fact, was a pre-existing injury, and we did provide a pretty thorough outline of all the treatment that was provided in Dr. Potter's June 29th, 2018 board response. Unfortunately, because the patient threatened Dr. Potter with a lawsuit, he felt compelled to report this to his insurance company. And even though nothing ever materialized from that, the insurance company reported this to the board. They thought that that was their obligation. However, that matter was ultimately resolved. We did provide a response, so I'm not going to go over all of those issues with the board. But it seemed at the April 29th board meeting, the board had very few questions about the actual treatment, and it didn't appear that there were any concerns with Dr. Potter's treatment. How this arose today regarding the formal interview was Dr. Potter was asked about there was some durable medical equipment that was provided to the patient, and there was no financial documentation located in his chart. The reason for that is because Dr. Potter doesn't bill for that. There was an outside company, Pinnacle West, that had approached Dr. Potter back in 2018, and they supplied durable medical equipment. They were in charge of billing insurance. They billed the patient. They handled all the financial matters. Dr. Potter and we submit a document that we received from Pinnacle West. It's a tracking form, and that shows what Dr. Potter was compensated. The way this Pinnacle West made it out to Dr. Potter was this small fee was in regards to his time and energy in explaining the durable medical equipment, teaching the patient, as well as fitting the patient for the DME. So he did receive a small fee as compensation. However, he never had any type of documentation or financial information because he didn't deal with that. Now, Dr. Potter worked with this company for less than 2 years. He had some concerns in 2018 when some patients approached him, showing what this company was billing their insurance companies, for this DME. He also, around the same time, attended a continuing education, which, raised some red flags regarding this practice. He immediately after that continuing education, I believe it was on a Saturday, as of that Monday, they ceased any type of relationship with that company and never utilized that company again. So after the April 2020 board meeting, Dr. Potter requested the financial records from Pinnacle West, and we provided the document that they provided to us. We did submit a supplement on May 18th, 2020, which explains all of this and Dr. Potter's relationship with this company. And so hopefully that answers most of the board's questions. If not, Dr. Potter is available to answer any additional questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Antonopoulos. Just point of clarification procedurally, do we need to swear in?
Yes, you yes. need to swear in, Potter.
Okay, and I don't have a script for the formal interview, so I'm. Yeah.
You can proceed yeah. with you would swear. I mean, can you have Dr. Potter acknowledge that he acknowledging this. He's participating in this formal interview in lieu of a formal hearing.
Yes, Dr. Potter, I don't know if you heard that. Our counsel has suggested that, you know, we need to have you acknowledge that you are participating in this formal interview in lieu of a formal hearing at this point. So can you please announce your name and that you are agreeable to that?
Can you hear me?
Hi, I can hear you now, Dr. Potter.
Okay, I'm Dr. Potter, and I am agreeable to that.
Okay, thank you for being agreeable to the formal interview in lieu of the formal hearing.
So, Dr. Potter, do you swear that the testimony you give is truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So at this point, I'm going to ask my board members if they have further questions. We are in receipt of the additional board materials that you had sent us from Pinnacle West. And as I recalled in previous meetings, that the first two allegations of malpractice and danger to the public were not of greatest concern, that the inadequate record keeping allegation that was added and the durable medical equipment billing and lack of record keeping around that was the bigger issue. I can say that I guess one of the questions that I have looking at the Pinnacle West additional information, there were a couple of charges on there, and I want to be clear, was Dr. Potter reimbursed or paid $550 for it looked like a TENS unit of $250, LSO brace of $100, a TLSO brace of $100, and a garment belt of $100. It wasn't real clear in the information that was given if that was just an amount charged or if that was the amount that the doctor approved for billing and was paid.
So the $550, that was what I was paid for fitting the equipment for the patient and explaining everything.
Okay, so the $550 was paid to you for services provided relating to those equipment, not for the actual durable medical equipment that was billed for by Pinnacle West, and they received whatever they received from the insurance company, correct? Dr. Potter, I didn't hear your response to the question. So you were paid $550?
Yes.
Okay. And I noticed on the same page there were a couple of redacted patients a couple of days later. Were those patients from your clinic as well?
Yes.
Okay. And so it looked like this was a, you know, in just a couple of days you had three different patients that had, you know, upwards of $650 for the other two and then $550 for you for the patient that we are discussing today. So I just want to make that clear in the record. And then I'm going to, at this point, then go ahead and ask my board members if they have any questions for you. And I think we'll start with Dr. Bennett because I know that he had some in our previous meeting.
Thank you, Chairman Guarino. This is Dr. Bennett. Good morning, Dr. Potter. The information that Dr. Guarino just verified with you was a point of concern. And as you probably are aware, Medicare has specific guidelines with regard to DME, durable medical equipment, and that they have to be certain steps and provisions have to be made. And I'm assuming that your role in this was to ensure that there was compliance with those by fitting the patient, instructing the patient, doing the kinds of things that are required by Medicare. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So you did have a financial relationship in one form or another, and the rule of law on this, basically with regard to what's legal and what's not, is either you are compensated for a referral, which is illegal, or you are an employee of the distributor and you have a contractual relationship with them and you are reimbursed specifically for that. In either case, there is no documentation of any of that stuff. And it gratifies me to hear that you have terminated your relationship with these people. The prescription of four durable medical equipment items for what appear to be rather uncomplicated conditions is highly questionable. And so you're to be commended for disassociating yourself with that. However, it does appear that there is insufficient documentation relative to your financial relationship, which did exist, as I said, one way or the other. So that's an area of concern. Another issue that I have in reviewing these records is if you look at the A to P lumbopelvic X-ray, you diagnosed a sacroiliac issue and with radiating pain, and you treated that SI issue. But if you'll notice in your X-ray, the patient's hands are right over the area that you're supposed to be visualizing. And that's bad for two reasons. Number one, it obfuscates the area of the spine that you want to be viewing. And the other thing is it puts patient at unnecessary risk of radiation exposure in their upper extremities. And so are you aware that's an issue?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So in my opinion, we need to see some corrective education.
Okay. Board members, do you have any other questions? We'll start with Dr. Knopf.
Good morning, Dr. Potter. This is Dr. Knopf. When we're looking at the reimbursement of funds, I noticed that there are different reimbursement fees for what appears to be similar services. How did you come to that arrangement with this DME provider? Was it always inconsistent, or what did that look like?
No, I think the reimbursement you're talking about, like the $50 down on the bottom.
Correct.
In my understanding, it was the insurances that they were in network with and not in network with. There were different fees according to that.
So there, it depended on the patient's status for coverage. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. In my understanding, yeah.
Okay. And when these fees were paid out to you, were they paid out to you personally or were they paid to your business?
To the business.
That's all the questions I have for now.
Okay, thank you. This is Dr. Guarino, and I'm going to call on Ms. Powell now if she has any questions joining by Google Meeting.
Yes, I do. The fee that you were paying, as I understand it, and with the patient about how to use it for, I think your attorney said time and energy. Are you aware that there are...
Ms. Powell, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're having a real hard time hearing you right now. It's okay. Pretty muffled.
Let me see if I get closer. Is that better?
That is better.
Okay. There is not supposed to be a charge to give patients instructions on something that you order for them, like on lumbar support or any DME. And the only time you would charge for a fitting is if it's a custom-made piece of DME, something that has to be cut and measured or fit. If it's more, it has to be tailored. Those are.
Ms. Powell.
Yes.
We're still having some trouble. Can you join by phone and mute your microphone, maybe on your computer?
Yes. Yes, I can. What number do you want me to call in on? Martin, which number do you want me to call in?
Just a moment. Let me pull it up.
Okay.
There it is. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Dial 1-917-960-7286, and I'll give you a PIN.
Go ahead.
291-580-142-#.
Okay. I'm leaving now.
Thanks for your patience, everybody. We're trying to get this call on the phone.
I should be honest with you.
Ms. Powell, you'll need to mute your speakers on your computer.
Thank you. Whoa. Then I can hear that. Okay. Are we good?
Thank you.
Okay. So what I was saying is that, the charges were for, as your attorney put it, time and energy in fitting the patient. And the only time there's really a charge to fit a patient or explain, instruct, whatever, is if it's a custom-made orthotic, something where straps have to be measured and cut, it actually has to be fitted. And I don't see that here. I see these as standard pieces of DME. Is that right?
These
are standard. Nothing had to be specifically fitted, right? And you have no financial relationship with the company, yet you have the patient sign the company's forms as I see them,
One of them actually points out that the patient will be accused of committing fraud if she withholds payment. But I'm not sure why you would have a patient sign any forms from a DME company unless you had some relationship. So I would just be cautious of that in the future. And the patient signs all these forms, of course. But there's really no charge to fit a patient unless it's a custom fit orthotic. So the $550 and the other charges for other patients would not be legitimate charges, which says to me we do need to talk about record keeping and documentation. That's my can you explain that, doctor, at all?
Go ahead.
The reason you would have to sign.
Let's go ahead and give Ms. Antonopoulos and her client a chance to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the form was that they had the patient sign, or that I guess I had the patient sign because they weren't in here at the time, was I think a reimbursement form. And this is one of the things that Dina had kind of mentioned before. One of the red flags that it raised to me is that there was a time where the patient ended up with a check from the insurance company, and that form had mentioned that they were supposed to forward that check to them for reimbursement for the medical equipment, and they didn't, and there was an issue with that, and that was one of the things that made me question, wait a minute, what's happening?
Okay.
What's this all about? And like Dina mentioned, there were a few things, a few patients that came in, you know, that I got to see some EOBs that I hadn't seen before. Those were things that made me think, holy cow, yeah, I know this TINS unit didn't cost that much, and if that's what they're reimbursing, you know, that's no good. And then definitely the seminar that I took, and I can't even remember who the doctor was, the name of the doctor, but, you know, he talked about DME and different companies, and for me, that was the biggest red flag.
That
this is no good.
I just had one last question, doctor. If you look at your notes on 710, where the ambulance was called, you make a note, and I understand about these computer software programs and how cookie cutter they can be, but you put the patient is progressing as anticipated. That appears in one of the other notes too, where she's having a particularly bad day. I just wanted to caution you, when you're doing the notes, to review what was salted. Okay.
Okay.
Those are my only questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Powell. Ms. Williams, did you have a question?
No, I'm trying to make sure everything is getting picked up.
Okay. All right. Very good. So
I'm going to hang up this line now.
Okay. So Ms. Powell is off of the phone and back on the computer. This is the point where we can deliberate about what we would like to do in this matter.
The attorney.
Ms. Antonopoulos, would you like to say anything before we deliberate and make some decisions here?
Yeah, actually just briefly, and sorry, I'm getting feedback, so hopefully you guys can hear me okay. In speaking with Dr. Potter, and I think I may have included it in our supplemental response, prior to using Pinnacle West, Dr. Potter utilized a company that only supplied TENS units. And unfortunately, he would have a very difficult time getting these approved through insurance, and it just had some real challenges with this company in being able to provide these to his patients. When he was actually approached by numerous different DME companies, and when Pinnacle West came forward and said, hey, we can supply these items to your patients, we handle all the billing, everything goes through us, and they're actually the ones that, you know, make the profit, and this is their this is supposedly this area of expertise. Dr. Potter felt that this was a great way to get this DME to his clients, his patients and not have the challenges with billing and insurance because that was handled by another entity. In a way, when he started providing this, he almost felt that this was too good to be true because he didn't have to deal with any of that. Unfortunately, once he saw these red flags, which they seemed to pop up within a few months of each other, he immediately took action and stopped using this company. So, Dr. Potter unfortunately learned a valuable lesson, and now he does not utilize any type of company like this. He had some real concerns when he realized what this company was billing out to insurance. And when he heard this individual speak at the continuing education seminar, he realized that this may not be a practice that is on the up and up, let's say, and immediately took action. So I do want to emphasize that with the board that he did learn and clearly is not continuing with this type of practice after he realized that it did have its issues.
Okay, thank you. And so it sounds like your testimony was that he realized that this was wrong and he can discontinue doing it. And looking at the records and through the written board materials, so it looked like there was about a 2-year period where he was generating potentially lots of income, through this DME scheme type of arrangement. And so thank you for your testimony. And at this point, I'm going to ask my board members. It's our time to deliberate. We're done hearing testimony. In the past, some of our options, of course, we can dismiss. We can, because it is a formal interview, we can take either disciplinary action or non-disciplinary action. If we were to take disciplinary action, that could include a civil penalty, potentially probation and ethics and boundaries examination, perhaps ethics, continuing education, record keeping, continuing education, and perhaps radiology based on some of the things we've seen. So board members, it's our time to deliberate. What would you like to do? Dr. Knopf?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'm going to start with a motion just for point of discussion, but I'll move that we find allegation 3, inadequate record keeping and billing, to be found true in this case, specifically citing R47902A5, failing to create an adequate patient record. And my recommendation would be that we issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter for a clear violation based on this allegation. And I would recommend 8 hours of record keeping, 4 hours of billing, and 2 hours of x-ray, continuing education on top of the annual requirement.
So I think we need a statute in addition to a rule. Okay.
Correct.
The advisory letter. Let me get my glasses. Sorry. The advisory letter is a non-disciplinary letter to notify a licensee that either A, while there is insufficient evidence to support disciplinary action, the board believes that continuation of the activities that led to the investigation may result in further board action against the licensee. B, the violation is minor or technical violation that is not of sufficient merit to warrant disciplinary action, or C, the violation is a minor or technical violation, and while the licensee has demonstrated substantial compliance through rehabilitation or remediation that has mitigated the need for disciplinary action, the board believes the repetition of the activities that led to the investigation may result in further board action against the licensee. Can you tie it into one of those stating it's a clear violation?
Okay. Yes, it would be as it relates to item C on that list.
Okay.
I believe the doctor's taken remedial steps at this point, understands that his actions were not right at this point, and if it reoccurs in the future, that there's potential additional board action that we would take.
Okay, and then as part of your motion, so that's one part, are you moving for non-disciplinary continuing education? Part of your motion or not?
Yes, I would like to add continuing education. I guess I would ask, is it, it seems like a clear violation, but I would like to include continuing education. So would it be more appropriate just to...
You can do an advisory letter along with non-disciplinary continuing education.
They're
okay. Two separate sanctions that are available to you. You don't have to find a violation per se because it's non-disciplinary, it's not a reportable
right.
violation. So your discussion should include what you think Dr. Potter did wrong, but you don't need to make conclusions of law if you want everything non-disciplinary.
Okay. Well, then...
Hold on. I'm not sure that where you have a Google meeting anymore.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so I'm going to take a break.
Dr. Potter and Ms. Anagnopoulos, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, then we can continue. What about Ms. Powell? Are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay, all right, we'll continue. On our end, we just lost our video call, but we've got the three of you, and so we can continue.
Okay, so I guess if I understand it correctly, if we're not citing any clear violation, we can issue non-disciplinary order for continuing education, and we wouldn't cite any specifics at that point.
Correct.
Okay.
So I have a procedural question, Mr. Chairman, relative to that.
Yes, Dr. Bennett.
Can we discuss this? There's is there a motion on the floor or not, or can we discuss?
There's no second.
Working on a motion, and then you can have
okay.
a discussion.
So the motion would be then, based on your advice, to issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education, 8 hours of record keeping, 4 hours of billing, and 2 of x-ray.
And I will second
that. That does not include an advisory letter then? Are you just going with the...
It would just be a non-disciplinary order for continuing
education.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. So then we need a second to have a discussion.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Ms. Powell, second. Okay. And now let's discuss. Dr. Bennett?
Yes. It's one of procedure. Can we issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter of clear violation and a non-disciplinary order for continuing education simultaneously?
Yes, you can do both. It's just not a it's not an advisory letter for a clear violation. It's got to fit into one of the three.
I'm sorry, that's what I was asking is because my concern is that I want our board to go on record as saying we are not taking disciplinary action at this time. However, we may in the future in the event of repetition of this behavior, which I think is only an option if it's a non-disciplinary advisory letter for a clear violation. Do I understand that correctly or not?
Again, but it's just, we're trying to stay away from advisory letter for a clear violation because that's not part of the definition.
Okay.
It's just an advisory letter, which you're correct, warns the licensee that if this conduct continues, it could result in discipline.
So it would be a non-disciplinary advisory letter of concern.
A non-disciplinary advisory letter, and then as it seems like it might fit under C, that it's a minor or technical violation, and while the licensee has demonstrated substantial compliance through rehabilitation or remediation that has mitigated the need for disciplinary action, the board believes that repetition of the activities that led to the investigation may result in further board action against the licensee.
Good. That's good. Okay.
So you do have that option. And then what happens is the advisory letter gets issued separately, and then a separate order for non-disciplinary continuing education gets issued, actually results in 2 documents.
Okay, and how does that correspond with the motion that we now have?
Dr. Knopf would need to amend. If
yes,
he is.
We'll make an amendment. In addition to the non-disciplinary order for continuing education, we would issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter per that item.
So, okay, as described in its 32901C.
Yes.
Okay, so we have a first. Is that a friendly second, Ms. Powell?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we have a first and a second. Any further discussion? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call for the question, and we'll do a roll call vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
Dr. Knopf?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
Dr. Guarino?
Aye. Okay, any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. So Dr. Potter, Ms. Anagnopoulos, this will conclude our formal interview for today. If you have any questions about the board actions that were taken today, you can contact our executive director after the meeting is over, and you'll also be contacted in writing as to what happened today.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
$12 from billing? 18 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I had it as 8 hours of record keeping, 4 hours of billing, and 2 hours of x-ray.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go on to tab number 4 now in the matter of Dr. Ali Hatem. Be present.
David Morrison, present for Dr. Hatem.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Morrison. Will anybody be recusing themselves today?
Yes, Dr. Stephen Knopf. I'll be recusing myself for this tab.
Okay. And is Dr. Hatem, is he present, Mr. Morrison? Or you may not be together. Okay.
Yeah, we're not together. Board members, this is Dr. Ali Hatem.
Hi. Thank you for joining.
Dr. Green, I'm just asking for 1 second. You still have a quorum, right?
Yes.
You have 3.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Powell, you're still here.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Dr. Kolash, can we get a board briefing, please?
Yes. This complaint number 2020-007, Dr. Ali Hatem. Allegations include the use of drugs or alcohol, conviction of a felony or misdemeanor, a pending criminal prosecution, failure to complete continuing education, failure to provide information to the board in a timely fashion, and unprofessional conduct.
Thank you. Mr. Morrison, do you have anything you'd like to say regarding your client?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Guarino and the board. Particularly, this is a matter that was self-reported. And so we want you to take notice of that. Dr. Hatem wasn't aware of the 10-day reporting. He thought it was 10 days from conviction, not 10 days from arrest. And so that was his mistake, and we fully admit that. As far as this matter, we had pended it from the standpoint of Dr. Hatem had been told to, as part of his criminal matter, do some courses, complete instruction in DUI and education, which he has done. And I believe that's the reason we pended it, was so that he could complete the criminal penalty and provide proof to the board of the same. In addition, we thought we had some proof that he had taken the 2 hours of record keeping appropriately. Dr. Hatem could not find proof of that, and so he retook two more hours, I believe in February of this year, and then submitted that to the board as well to complete his educational requirements. So it is our position that he has completed all the terms and conditions of the criminal matter. We feel that that would be sufficient for the board to be satisfied that he understands what was done and will never do it again.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Hatem? Ms. Powell, do you have any questions?
No, I do not. Thank you.
Dr. Bennett, any questions?
I guess yes. This is Dr. Bennett, only to the extent that Dr. Hatem or Dr. Morrison, can you apprise us of the current legal actions that are underway, or have they been terminated, or what is the status relative to those items?
I'll let Dr. Hatem answer the question concerning the breathalyzer thing that was put on his car. I'm not sure if that has been terminated yet or not. The other parts of it have been completely terminated in the sense that he's completed the education and done all the coursework that was required from the criminal matter. Dr. Hatem, please add to that.
Yes. So to my knowledge, I've done everything that I needed to do. The breathalyzer I had to have in my car for 6 months. That's already been done. And it's been taken out, and everything is good with the DMV as far as my driver's license and everything.
And has there been any of the standard testing that is typically done? My concern as a board member is recidivism. You know, we have a second occurrence in a very short period of time, and the experts in the field tell us that one occurrence is one level of significance. The chance of recurrence is chance of this happening again increases every time you have a second offense. So my concern is, does the board have a responsibility relative to requiring some further evaluation or testing relative to this matter?
My response to that, Dr. Bennett, would be that number one, the behavior occurred where there was no risk to the public concerning his professional treatment of patients. There also was included in the packet a letter from his employer indicating that he was a stellar employee and that there had been no problems with any of his patients or any employment. I mean, obviously, I understand your concern. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to minimize it, what happened, but certainly Dr. Hatem has not engaged in that behavior ever since those incidents, and will certainly assure the board that this has nothing to do with any of his professional activities as well.
So this is Dr. Garino. In the past, you know, what we have done on occasions like this is we would forward this to a formal interview and consider all of the options that we have, you know, potentially a monitor, potentially having, you know, abstinence from alcohol and drug screening, et cetera, none of which we can do at this point on our tab as an initial action on complaints. And so my question for my board members is, do you think that this potentially rises to a level of seriousness that we should forward it to formal interview where we have some of those other remedies, or is it something that you think we can handle in today's meeting?
I have one other question, Mr. Chairman. This is Dr. Bennett. Where are we with regard to 2019 continuing education?
I turned everything in as far as 2019. I completed all my CEs.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and that's confirmed by Dr. Kolash.
This is a hard one.
This is Dave Morrison. Right. I believe that's correct. We submitted documentation of that.
Yeah, Dr. Kolash confirmed that we've got the continuing education credit squared away. Just, is anybody else having trouble with the internet right now? Okay. All right. So, board members, what's your pleasure? Would you like to continue the investigation as a formal interview or take other action today?
Ms. Powell, I'm interested in your opinion relative to this as well, seeing as how it's just the three of us here. I would ordinarily be inclined to move on, but, you know, in this situation, we have 111 miles an hour while impaired, and that's significant, and that's kind of hanging me up on this. I view any time that kind of behavior occurs, it's something that we need to be reassured more about.
And I would agree and was about to make the motion that we take this to formal interview. Too close a time frame, too fast a speed, too many complicating factors. I'm just not comfortable with not being able to impose some form of discipline. So
I'll second that. Second.
I'm sorry. I need a clarification on the motion. I didn't hear you.
Yes, I would make the motion to move to formal interview.
Okay, and then Dr. Bennett seconds.
That's correct.
And for discussion, you know, I think that's the right call. You know, in the past, we've also awarded substance abuse evaluations and meetings with addictionologists and those types of things for evaluation. So we'll have all those options in the formal interview if it's passed. So I'll go ahead and call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
So we have three ayes and one recused. I'll call anyway those that opposed. Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it. And Mr. Morrison, we're going to continue this to formal interview. Thank you.
Thank you. If I may, Dr. Guarino, for a quick matter, I'm also on tab 7, and I think it's something that would go quickly. Is it possible to jump to tab 7?
Yeah, we'll take this out of order, and we'll go to tab number 7 right now in case number 2018-055 in the matter of Dr. Robert Gear.
Thank you.
So this is a matter, we were awaiting for a signature on a consent agreement. It's our option to approve the consent agreement as it is written and signed or not approve it. And, if we think further action needs to be taken, board members, I'm sure you've all read the consent agreement. What are your thoughts? And I guess, Mr. Morrison, do you have anything you'd like to say before we deliberate?
I do not. Dr. Gear has signed the agreement, agreed to it, and certainly the terms and conditions are agreeable to us.
Okay, thank you.
Is Dr. Gear signed in?
Dr. Gear, are you available by phone?
I don't expect him to be on the phone.
Okay. And Dr. Kolasch, can you refresh my memory? Was this consent agreement drafted by staff, or was this the board's wishes in a meeting?
As I recall, this was drafted between me and Mr. Morrison.
Okay.
By way of clarification, Mr. Dr. Bennett, this pertains specifically to a particular charge and not relative to other issues that have been brought before the board.
Just to the one case, 2018-055.
Okay.
Okay, would anybody like to make a motion to approve?
Yes, this is Dr. Knopf. I'll make the motion to approve the signed consent agreement.
Second. Ms. Powell, did you second?
Yes, Dr.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question.
Roll call, please.
Roll call vote, please. Those in favor signify by aye.
Dr. Kanoff?
Aye.
Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
Dr. Guarino?
Aye. So we're hearing a whole lot of shuffling of papers or coffee cups, or I'm not sure what's going on. But if you're not on the call and speaking right now, please make sure you're muted. Okay, let's move on to tab number five.
Thank you, Dr. Guarino. Thank you, board members.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Morrison. Okay. Okay. So we'll take just a few minute break here to have people log on if they're not.
And just for the record, it is being recorded via the audio.
Okay, looks like I'm back in the Google meeting. Okay, let's go back to tab number five in the matter of Dr. Rue.
This is a whether to open file. Staff received a notice from a.
Are you Dr. Rue?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, come on up, please. Have a seat. Your microphones are red because they're muted right now. But when you're ready to speak and introduce yourselves, you can press the button in the front, and you will get a chance. It'll glow green, and you can introduce yourself.
So yes, Doc, as you just mentioned, Dr. Rue and his counsel, Mr. Kleekin, are present. This is a whether to open case to because staff received a malpractice notice. This same action was heard before the board in February 2nd, 2018, regarding this matter, and the board voted to dismiss with no basis to proceed.
Okay, thank you. And by chance, is the patient with the initials HR present today? And is she present by phone? Okay, thank you. Please introduce yourselves.
My name is Jack Kleekin, and I represent Dr. Rue.
Yeah, my name is Dr. Rue, Yan Rue.
Hi, thank you. Okay, so you know why you're here today. Do you have anything you would like to say in an opening remark?
Yes. So the board previously addressed this and recommended or required that Dr. Rue have an assistant, female assistant present during any future therapy treatment. He has since that time done that and is continuing to do that. Perhaps the day before the statute of limitation, 2-year statute of limitations was to expire, a lawsuit was filed, and I'm defending that lawsuit. It is in its early stages. We have yet to depose the plaintiff. Actually, we are deposing her next Monday. And I'm happy to provide you any information you need about the status of the lawsuit. But this was reported by the insurance company as they're required to do. My understanding is if the case is settled, that will come back to the board. If the case is tried, the results of that will come back to the board, particularly if there's a finding against Dr. Rue. So, suggesting would be to defer any action until either of those events occur.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Williams, what say you?
I was a little confused. I thought you said come before the board. I'm having a hard time hearing.
I apologize. Was there previous action?
Can we get clarification on that? If we need a recess to do that, we can.
Read it to you. You read the... after saying that it was on September 19, 2018, the letter from Jackie Connell says, the board stressed that communications need to be clear on treatment provided, the patient accepts the treatment before providing, and that you continue modification to your practice by having an assistant in the room during treatment.
So it sounds like it was maybe an advisory letter?
It, or a suggestion, but not an
but
order.
No board order.
Okay.
My understanding of this previously was, you know, if there's no new information that's presented to you, then you've already looked at this and made your decision. If you think something new is going to come out of a malpractice case subsequent to this, you certainly have an option to table it.
And if something new did come out of it, it would be reported to us anyway, and it would be on our agenda, correctly?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Board members, do you have any questions for the doctor or his counsel?
So this is Angela. I have a motion would be the case was already dismissed.
Ms. Powell, we're having trouble hearing you. You're a little bit muffled again. Can you maybe lean into the mic and?
Sure. Better?
Yes, better.
What are optional motions directed to our attorney?
So it's a weather to open. So we either open a claim or we don't. We can take no action.
I make a motion to time.
You made a motion to open or to
take no action.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call for the question to take no action. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, any opposed? Okay, four ayes have it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. May we be excused?
Yes, thank you. Next case is case number 2018-18, Dr. Herb Schillerstrom.
Dr. Schillerstrom is not signed in to be present.
Okay. Dr. Schillerstrom, are you on our Google meeting or joining by phone today? If so, we cannot hear you. You need to unmute yourself. Dr. Kolesch.
So, after discussion and deliberation at your meeting January 27th, 2020, the board agreed to accept monthly payments of $1,000 for each of 5 months due on the 15th of the month beginning February 15th, 2020, in fulfillment of paragraph 3 of the board order in case number 2018-018. That board order became effective in the middle of 2018, about June, and it was brought before you in January due to non-compliance with those payments.
Okay, and just to be clear, Dr. Schillerstrom is not present. Okay, so he is in violation of a board order. He's late on the payment arrangement that we created for him. And we need to decide if we're going to, what to do from this point forward. I can say, you know, I recalled this started with Cigna requesting $50,000 in payback from claims from him. When we requested additional information from him, he had a unfortunate hard drive crash that destroyed all the data that we needed to determine really what was happening and what was not happening. And so then we created the board order, which was sent by certified mail to him about a year and a half ago, indicating that he needed to pay $5,000 and amongst other things. And then he came before us a year later, and when he was in violation of that, and said he never received it, even though it was sent to him by certified mail. And we were, I think we were generous enough to create this $5,000 payment spread over 5 months for him, of which he paid only 1 month and then missed all other payments. And now he wants us to waive the fee and dismiss it. So it's a little bit insulting to me at this point. So board members, how do you feel about this? What would you like to do?
Dr. Green, I believe that there are also many, many attempts, even just outside of the orders that we sent him. There were many additional chances given to him to show up before us, and he missed meetings, and he wasn't appearing before us. So it wasn't just a lack of communication with the materials we sent. There was just non-appearance, even in the meetings where he was scheduled as well.
Okay. So, Ms. Powell?
His blatant lack of respect for the board is what it is. It's time.
Okay. So we have a violation of a board order, and one of the things that we can do is send it to formal hearing. Or
is there, I guess, any clarification? Is there a non-compliance case open? Is that part of your procedure? Okay. Is that your procedure, though? If there's non-compliance, you open a separate case. Okay. So I would, my advice would be to open a case for non-compliance and probably need to come back to you for one more meeting, and then you can move it forward at that point. You haven't. It's a new investigation. It should follow your normal procedures.
So the language of the board order for noncompliance says, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, but I just want to be clear on what we're doing here. It says for noncompliance, if the respondent violates the order in any way or fails to fulfill the requirements of the order, which he did after giving notice and the opportunity to be heard. So that's just not sending it to a formal hearing. You're saying that's opening up another case for noncompliance.
Generally, that's the procedure.
Okay. That's good practice.
You open up a noncompliance case.
Okay.
It becomes a whole separate matter than the one that you disapproved
of. Okay. Okay. So that would be a cleaner path to not considering all these other things.
Yeah.
And so what would happen then if in the meantime he pays his $4,000 fee, does that noncompliance case just be a second case hanging out there, and then we have to revisit all of the other, well, I guess that's the only thing, because it's noncompliance for a board order.
I mean, you can still proceed with the case, and even if he should pay, he's still late.
Okay.
Noncompliance, so you would still have sanctions available to you.
Okay, so it's a separate case that then we could send a formal hearing or whatever we want to do at that point. Okay.
This is Dr. Knopf. I move that we open up a complaint of noncompliance with the issued board order.
There's a second?
I second the motion.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye via roll call vote.
No.
No? Okay, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the ayes have it, and we will open up a separate complaint for noncompliance. Okay. Does anybody need a break at this point, board members?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, probably 5 to 10 minutes max, and then we'll be back. Okay, it's 10:16. We're back in regular session. Our next tab is tab number 8, matter of Dr. Lehi Demas.
I believe Dr. Demas is in the audience.
Hi. Go ahead and have a seat. You can unmute and introduce yourself for the record, please.
My name is Dr. Lehi Demas.
Hi, thanks for joining. Dr. Kolash?
Dr. Demas has applied for licensure by examination and PMMTP certification. His application is complete. The board tabled this application for further research, and this is his time to come back.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion that we break into executive session to receive legal counsel. And is there a second?
I'll second.
Before you vote, just if anyone else thinks there's any legal advice on any agenda items, we could do them at that time as well, then we don't have to go in and out.
Okay.
But yeah. Look at the agenda real quick and see if you have any.
I think looking at the agenda, you know, we can, in executive session, we should talk about the temporary licensure issue as well.
Okay, so that's item K-12.
Yep, K-12. Okay. So what that means is that we're going to leave. You can all stay here. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
You have to vote.
All those in favor of breaking into executive session, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
And I second.
Any opposed? Okay.
I did.
I did not hear a second.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And seconded or made by?
Ms. Powell, I'll call you on your cell phone.
And there was a second by Dr. Knopf, and it's 10:19 a.m. Okay, the time is 10:34. We're back in regular session. And we are on tab number 8. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Is it Demas or Damon?
Demas.
Demas. Hi.
Has Angela, Ms. Powell joined us yet, or is she here?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
Ms. Powell, did you have any questions for Dr. Demas?
Thank you, Chairman. It was a long time. Why weren't you practicing chiropractic? That's my question. You went to all that trouble for school, took all the trouble. What happened?
She wants to know why there was a 10-year gap in your licensure.
Yeah, so it just wasn't very beneficial financially. So when you come out, you know, doctors don't get paid a whole lot. So I had other opportunities to make more money, and I pursued those.
This will sound like a great question, but I have one more question. During this time, you know, you were involved in another business. Did you take any kind of continuing education normally, but continuing ed classes in chiropractic or anything to do with your educational background?
No, I did not. I've recently tried to pursue that, you know, with me trying to get my license back. I found it difficult to be able to go through the process without an active license. So I'm kind of getting log jammed as far as that goes.
Okay. Thank you. Those are the only questions I have.
Okay. Would anybody like to make a motion to grant or deny licensure?
I actually have a couple questions.
Oh, go ahead, Dr. Bennett.
Thank you, Dr. Greeno. Dr. Demas, hi. Wayne Bennett. So by way of clarity, were you in practice for a time prior to deciding not to be practicing?
Yes, sir.
And for how long?
I'd say probably 2 to 3 years.
All right. So initially you have 2 to 3 years. Obviously our concern here
is experience and
period,
proficiency.
Long time.
Agreed. Yeah.
Now we're coming back in.
It's all understandable.
And yeah, and you appreciate it. We appreciate it. We have the statute. We have to act according to the statute, but we have concerns.
Yeah. No, I understand.
So can you help me feel good about the overall rightness?
Sure. I mean, like I practiced, in Boise, Idaho for about a year, saw quite a few patients and got a lot of good experience there as an associate doctor, under two doctors there. And then I moved to Arizona and got my licensure here and worked, and gained good valuable experience, you know, doing that. And so, you know, I don't think that ever goes. I mean, obviously I would still read things. I still have emails coming in from different things, you know, for chiropractic, and just obviously I went to school for that, so I'm curious about it. I kept up a little bit that way, but nothing formal as far as, you know, CE hours or anything like that.
Okay, and so we've got 12 and a half years since your part four and a number of years since, and you understand this, we understand this. What's your plan? I mean, if it were me, I'd be like, I got a situation here and I need to do some hustling. And I'm not saying that should be you. I'm just asking what are you planning to do to make up that gap?
Well, my plan is to get some CE. You know, I need to be able to go and see if, you know, anything's changed. I don't know that a whole lot has as far as the actual practice, you know, and, you know, adjustments and things like that. But there's probably some modalities that I need to, you know, brush up on, things like that. But I'm definitely going to seek some CE to be able to get brushed up. But I mean, realistically, every single one of us sitting here knows that all the stuff we went through in school doesn't replace what you get when you're in practice. And I got quite a bit of that. I saw a lot of patients. I have, you know, a lot of adjustments under my belt that way. And I don't think that ever goes.
Okay. Yeah, I would, the dynamics of the healthcare environment is in a state of change. You are going to find things have changed. And we don't want to see you back here.
I don't intend to be.
Okay, that's good. Because there is, I'm just giving you a heads up that there are there are expertise and there are things that we need to keep up on, and you've got a big gap. We really want to encourage you to embrace that and jump on it.
Absolutely. I appreciate that.
Okay. No further questions.
Thank you.
All right. This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make the motion to grant licensure upon payment of appropriate fees.
Second the motion.
Okay, we've got a second by Ms. Powell. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, the ayes have it, which means you will, in fact, have to come back one more time because it's a requirement in the first year of licensure to sit in one of our meetings. We'll see you again.
Okay. And the two that I've been to don't, they don't fulfill that requirement?
After licensure.
After licensure. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, before you leave.
Powell.
I just want to make a comment. Doctor, a lot has changed in the way of documentation and record keeping, so I strongly urge you to take more than the required class hours for record keeping and documentation, please.
Thank you. That is one thing I have noticed actually through emails and different things that I've seen with that, so I will certainly take that into account. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We're going to go on to tab number 9 now under renewal and the matter of Dr. Denise Holtzman.
Yes, Dr. Holtzman has requested a waiver of the late fee for the 2020 renewal, and she is on via Google Meet, and I believe representation may also be.
Hello, Dr. Holtzman.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, great. And do you have an attorney representing you today?
Yes,
I do. And who is that?
Christopher Enos, E-N-O-S.
Okay. And Christopher, are you present at the meeting? We cannot hear you if you are.
Just indicate I'm present.
He's present. He's present at the meeting. Do you need to hear him?
I'd like him to introduce himself for the record.
All right. This is Christopher Enos. I'm here with Dr. Holtzman.
Thank you. Okay, we've read the materials that you've submitted. Mr. Enos or Dr. Holtzman, would you like to say anything at this point before my board members have some questions for you?
I submitted my renewal as I always do. I received a confirmation that I thought was sufficient because the payment's the last act that you perform, and I was awaiting my license, so I was actually surprised when it didn't arrive, and that's when I called the board to find out what happened, and that's why I'm before you now. I am unable to work at this time due to illness. I have applied for Social Security disability. That hearing will happen after the first of the year, but it has left me financially challenged, and that $200 penalty is I can't pay it right now. There's no way I have no way of making that payment, and I don't want to lose my license. I'm keeping it active because I have hopes that once, ironically, I do receive disability, I'll have the money to get more aggressive treatment and hopefully go back to work at least part time. So I want to keep my license active right now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So just point of clarification, Dr. Kolash, our executive director, as I read through the materials, it looked like Dr. Holtzman paid her fee, and her testimony was that she submitted the application at the same time, but it was not received, and then it was resubmitted at some point, and then there was a late fee?
That is all correct. When we did not receive a submitted application online, then the letter of administrative suspension went out. And after that, Dr. Holtzman called us. I told her we did not have the license application, the renewal application, received. Technically, I think that the error was she did not click the last button on the Adobe form that submits that payment. The instructions for that are clearly laid out on our website, and she successfully did that the year before.
I thought that the payment was received, but the application was not.
That's correct. I didn't know that the payment had been received though, because I couldn't, I don't look up the for payment until I, after I receive a, an application for renewal.
So I, so help me understand when the, I renew online, but I don't remember. I thought that, I thought you'd go through the application, put in your CE, answer the question, and then once that's completed, then there's a, what happens then? Does that get submitted separately from the payment?
So, as you're filling out that application, you click a button that takes you to the State of Arizona Payment Center, put in your credit card information. That center gives you an authorization code. With that authorization code, you need to put that back into the application and then finish signing it and submitting it.
Okay. Okay. Ms. Powell, did you say something?
Yes, I wanted to make a comment. I know of instances where this has happened before, and I think it's in the way that it takes your payment, it processes the payment, it keeps the payment, but if the doctor doesn't push that last button with the number in it, it doesn't actually file the application, which is confusing, not to say this is Dr. Holtzman of you, but it's confusing to some of the older doctors who have been doing the application hard copy for many years and trying to understand, explain to them that they have to go through this final step. And I would logically think that too. If it's accepting the payment, if it takes the payment out of my account, did it not accept the application? It's a little bit confusing.
So,
I think we need to think about that.
Okay. Point of clarification, we have everything we need right now. Her current application has been received and everything looks good.
Yes.
Okay.
The only lack is because of the late submission would be the late fee.
Okay.
And can I ask a question?
Yes, Ms. Williams.
Currently administratively suspended.
Yes.
So the statute the board would consider this under is 32.923D that sets out the late, all the requirements that have to be met before it can be reinstated.
Okay.
Which includes the late fee.
So do we have the authority to waive the late fee?
Not in that statute. You do not.
Okay. So we can't be nice if we wanted to.
Unless you find that there was some kind of technical problem, then you know, I think in those instances, I think there's been late fees with, not with this agency necessarily, but if there was just a widespread glitch in the system.
Okay. All right. So, I haven't pulled up the statute, but so she would need to pay the fee. And we would have the authority to take her off of administrative suspension and have a current license.
And I'm looking at the, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the language of the statute right now. And, you know, what does it mean to complete an application? And what I understand is that you can have the in its current situation, you can have the application for all intents and purposes complete, but then you have to confirm the act of putting in an authorization number from the State Payment Center is what officially we are saying completes the application.
For the renewal application. Yeah, for the renewal application, after you put in that authorization code, you must also click a button that happens to be blue at the bottom of the application, and if you don't click that, you don't get a confirmation screen that it was submitted, and the instructions on the website clearly say you don't see this.
You're breaking up, Dr. Palash.
I'm sorry, Ms. Powell, did you say something?
Yeah, he's breaking up. I can't understand about every third word.
I've switched microphones. Is that better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, do you need me to repeat what I said about the instructions?
Yes, please.
Okay.
So the instructions to complete the renewal application instruct the applicant to input the authorization code in the correct field, scroll down and click a button that it submits that application electronically for the director's signature. If you don't click that last button, it is not submitted to the office for review. So it has not been submitted. The applicant also receives emails throughout these steps that says you did this and you've completed this and the next step is. And that they also receive a confirmation screen that says you have successfully submitted it if they have done so. The steps are multiple, but they are clearly spelled out.
Okay, so Dr. Holtzman.
Yes.
It sounds like you need to pay your fee so that we can take action and get your license up to date again and take you off of administrative suspension. We don't have the authority to waive that fee.
I don't know what to say because I don't have that fee for you. I don't. There's no $200 unless I don't know, sell something. Is there a way I can pay it out? Is there a way? I mean, I just don't have the money. I simply, otherwise I would have paid it. And as far as I'm concerned, I did do everything necessary. I pushed the right buttons. I've done it before. I received confirmation of payment. And honestly, I thought that I had sufficiently applied and renewed my license. It had never occurred to me that I hadn't followed through. I always do everything the way it is instructed. Why would I not follow through? I've done this year after year. I'm an old doctor. I've licenses in many states. So it's not like it's my first go around. Clearly the religious, whether it was on my end or computer, but I don't know what to say. I cannot produce $200 for you today.
Okay. I'm gonna have you hold on just a second there, Dr. Kolesh.
Yes. There is another part of the statutes that allow for up to 2 years to reinstate that administrative suspension. So if it's a financial hardship now, that there is some time in the statutes, if she's not practicing now, then she's not losing any income from not practicing, but it gives her some time for reinstatement.
Okay, so she has up to 2 years from the date that the renewal should have happened to pay the $200 fee, and there's no additional penalty for that.
As long as she keeps the current with the CE.
Okay.
Okay.
Did you hear that, Dr. Holtzman? You've got to continue with your continuing education requirements, but you can pay the $200 in the next several months or years.
A year from, so it's 2 years from the date of January 1st, 2020 or December 31st, 2019. Because when I have disability, hopefully that's through, then I can pay you. I'll have the money to do that, but that would be March or April of 2020 by time, because if it comes in January, it takes 3 months to get a decision.
So, okay.
Yeah. But Dr. I would go Kolesh. Ahead and renew, would I go ahead and renew just, I always do in December?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you need to pay the renewal fee at that time. Make sure you put in the continuing education. Okay. And at the time that you want to have it taken off of administrative suspension, pay the $200 late fee. And it has to be within the 2 years from January 1st, 2020, or December 31st to 2020.
December 31st, 2019, correct?
2 years from that, so December 31st, 2021.
Okay.
Dr. Greena, you may want to do a motion just because it's on. It was Dr. Holtzman's request for a waiver, so if you're going to deny it.
Okay. So would anybody like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Knopf. I will make the motion to deny the waiver based on today's discussion.
Is there a second?
Yeah, Dr. I'll second the motion.
and I think we should have some discussion about it.
Absolutely. Now is the time for discussion. We have a first and a second.
Do we have a sense of how frequently, I mean, I have personal experience with people coming to me with this exact same problem.
Yeah.
And so my question is it a more systemic, non-user friendly website issue? And if so, do we have some obligation to get that matter corrected?
On the first question, approximately 100 or so people seemed to have or had a late fee. A number of those people thought they had submitted on time. I don't know exactly the number that claimed that they had submitted, but it was less than 100 out of 2,400 active licenses.
Okay. Still, is it more than 10?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then my sense is that it's not that big a deal to put in big, obvious, you know, messaging of some kind. Hey, don't make this mistake. You know, I don't think that's hard to fix that problem.
And the website was designed with that intent. We are restricted with the types of information technology infrastructure that the state allows us to use at this time. So it's to do a paperless application. That is the current best model without having a complete changeover to an e-licensing platform.
How consistent is our application process with the other healthcare provider boards?
So those that have not gone to an e-licensing platform do this very similarly.
Okay. Are we aware of any issues that they may be having?
I haven't asked other boards how many that are on that.
Okay. Well, just for the record, I think it's, in my opinion, that we need to visit that subject.
Perhaps. This is Angela. Perhaps we can include it in the license renewal notice, a cautionary warning or something like that.
And I believe it's there.
It warns them of this potential. Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Ms. Powell, I don't know.
Ms. Powell, are you an aye for the motion?
What are the consequences if I'm a nay?
None.
I've never done that before.
You're a free-thinking human. So I'll ask, are you a nay for denying the request?
Yes.
Okay, so you.
I'm nay.
So we have one nay and three ayes. Dr. Holtzman, the motion carries and your request to waive the $200 fee is denied, but you understand what we talked about today. You need to pay it in approximately the next 2 years and stay up to date on your license in the meantime and your continuing education requirements and also do your renewal at the end of this year.
Yes, I understand.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to tab number 10 now, which is the GRC Governor's Regulatory Review Council, 5-year review for extension.
Appropriate.
We have some rules maybe we need to change.
Matter of fact, what I'm requesting is some time for your new staff to investigate the number of rules that we would like to change. All of your staff except Jackie and myself, started, sometime in March and they have not really had the opportunity to learn the processes and I have not had the opportunity to learn from them where the deficiencies lie. And so I'd like, guidance from the board to request a continuance on replying to GRC with, rule changes. For some period. I think their minimum is 120 days and they can go out to a year.
Okay. So we have not yet submitted the request for a delay in that, have we?
We have not.
So you're asking for guidance today on how far we want to do that, if at all?
Yes.
Okay. Board members, what's your pleasure? I'm just wondering, you know, what is the, I mean, it's great that, should this be an item on our agenda, perhaps, like, after we handle this today, to bring it back and say, okay, you know, it sounds like a board retreat almost, you know, what are the things that we've seen that aren't working, you know, what's obsolete? Do we get buy-in from other stakeholders like the association, that type of thing, or just, you know?
And I would like to see at least a board work day or two on this issue.
Okay.
I mean, with that being said, just from a matter of timing, if we think a year is too long, how long do you think it takes for your team to prep for that meeting and then?
Here is a big issue that we are challenged with, and that is that I've entered into an inter-service agency agreement with the osteopathic board, and their employees moved from the chiropractic board to the osteopathic board, and that agreement was to help train the new staff. That all happened at the same time that they could no longer come into the office and train my staff in the manner that we had anticipated. And you have a fantastic staff, and they're doing a great job learning it, but they're doing a lot of learning on their own, and it's been a challenge for them. And I think that as soon as we can get some additional time with the people who held those positions before to show them the pitfalls and regulations provide for the board would be in a better position to have confidence in what recommendations come out of the work days.
Are there any consequences to us kicking the can down the road, so to speak?
It was not indicated in the letter that they provided me. They just said, if you want an extension, please get it in by the due date.
Okay. But,
I have a question. Dr. Kolisch, in the process of sitting through boring reports in hearings in the House and the State and the Senate, where other people are reporting on their, what I'm understanding to be sunset periods where they have to undergo mandatory audits of various boards and commissions, I don't think that this is that. And I want to know where we are. If there's a that, I want to know where we are relative to that.
Okay. This is not that, but I'm sure that it informs the sunset review. And that sunset review is another year out. I'm sure that that's...
Is that a year in addition to our extension, or it would,
oh, no,
if
no,
we
no,
had
no,
a year
sorry.
Extension, it would line up?
In 2021.
So if we had our extension, we would potentially have these two events fairly... closed.
Yes.
All right.
Might there be some economy of scale in the fact that we're kind of doing them concurrent with each other?
There would, yes.
Okay. So is there any reason why we wouldn't seek, I think the staff, I want to commend the staff. I think they've done a great job, especially given the challenges, and we want to put them in a position where they can be successful. And I think that, you know, there's that saying, time, quality, money, pick any two. And so I don't want to be pressed by time if we can get this job done well and with quality by spending a little time. So my bias is to kick this out as far, kick the can down. If we can kick the can down as close to that other deadline and do them both at the same time, I think there's some efficiency to be gained there.
Now, a couple of years ago, I believe we are prohibited from hiring a lobbyist. So it's all on us.
Well, officially, I'm the board lobbyist, but.
Yeah.
You can do a rule writer. There are rule writers out in the community that contract with state agencies.
Okay. Give it a good start. Yeah. Okay, so I think we need a motion to.
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make the motion to. Make the request for a one-year extension. I think the timing makes sense.
I'll second.
Okay. Further discussion, Dr. Golash?
Could I have that say up to, so that if it doesn't take that long, we have that?
Yes, I'll make that amendment that we'll request up to 1 year for that extension.
Concur.
Okay, so for further discussion, so how does that work when you fill out the application? Is that what you put on for up to 1 year, or do they want to?
Based on you brought up about the sunset review, I'll contact people who understand that process and back up from that when they need, if they're going to use the GRC recommendations, when they need to have those. And that would be my deadline.
Okay, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have four ayes. Not to be confused with glasses. sorry. Okay, next we are looking at the, I guess there was a question raised whether we should be doing COVID-19 clinical testing and if it's inside our scope of practice. Tab number 11.
That's correct. I received a call from the state association inquiring if the board believed that the if it was within the doctor of chiropractic scope of practice to perform the nasal swab COVID-19 tests. You have the statute in front of you, and it's for your discussion.
Okay. Well, I didn't see anything that would prohibit that. We can already do venipuncture. We can draw a vial of blood. We can do urinalysis and other things. So when I looked at it, I thought, of course we can. But what do my board members think?
I didn't read it that way. It says procedures that are limited to, and it specifically states urine collection, fingerprints, or venipuncture, in order to determine propriety of a regimen of chiropractic care, et cetera. So to me, that's fairly specific. And I think that the language is cumbersome, and I think that it's a perfect example of what we need to be revisiting, because the technology moves ahead, and we are confined by our – I mean, there are a lot of very safe, non-invasive diagnostic procedures that are valid that the literal interpretation of the statute prohibits a doctor of chiropractic from performing. My opinion.
Yeah, I read it the same way as you did, Dr. Bennett, being pretty clear what we're limited to in swabs, although certainly easier than venipuncture. You know, it's not called out specifically, and I think we're limited by that language, unfortunately.
Ms. Powell?
I read it like you did. I think if it doesn't specifically state you can't do it, you should be able to do it. And where it says care, in order to determine the propriety of a regimen of chiropractic care, I think it's important. I can't see any reason why it shouldn't be done.
Yeah, and I guess that was my thought. I thought of it as less invasive than drawing blood out of somebody's arm. And during a pandemic time when we keep hearing that there's a bunch of tests that are available, but people are having a hard time getting them, when I talked to people, I didn't see why anybody could not do it with our scope of practice. You know, and the language as I read it is, you know, we can do these tests in the spirit of referring to an outside medical provider or specialist who might be able to help this patient at a greater level. So, are we hurting the public by sending them to a facility where they may not be served? If you want to take on the responsibility of doing testing in your office to determine if they're positive or negative and send them to the appropriate provider after that, is where my brain went with this.
I certainly agree with you in principle. Another interpretation of the language would be to say that it says, and clinical laboratory procedures that are limited to blah, 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 is taking a COVID-19 swab test a clinical laboratory procedure, or is it a separate diagnostic procedure? That's another interpretive
Sorry, but it is.
I get it.
It is a lot of
I think the diagnostic goes to x-rays.
Mm-hmm.
Physical and clinical exams, diagnostic x-rays.
Right.
And clinical laboratory procedures that are limited to. Those are keywords in your statute.
Collection
of fingerprints or venipuncture.
I don't think they could have anticipated this to put it in the language. I don't think it's a broad interpretation to say collecting mucus is part of a laboratory procedure. It is a laboratory procedure. When you talk about the purpose of the scope of practice, it's to not hurt the public. Are we being negligent in not doing the test? Those are all arguments, I understand. But.
Well, and so I think it's nice that it's on our agenda and we got a public record of this discussion, but I don't know that we really need to do anything with this today. And if we did, I don't know that it would hold any teeth if it's not in the statute to be prevented. Or, I mean, we'll have to review it like we do other things on a case-by-case basis. If somebody's injured and there's a complaint, then it comes in front of us, and then we decide if maybe they had any training at all and taken the sample and they learn it on YouTube.
Well, and that's a great point, too. I mean, you look how these swabs are collected. At least in my training, I've never collected a swab to that extent. So I think there is a level of experience and education that has to be in place specific to this.
And I bet that would take about 5 minutes.
Yeah,
but there should be something
in place, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So do nothing, but I think that we should put this on our list of things to visit in the future.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we can table the discussion for another day.
And offer a class.
Ms. Powell, I didn't understand you.
And offer a class for doctors in the future.
Okay. Yeah, educational opportunity for somebody.
Education.
Amen.
That has no special interest in the board. let's move on to our tab number 12, which is the temporary licensure tab.
So staff brings this back before the board for a couple of reasons. One is I received a request from a consultant to a contractor to the military who would like to accompany the unit that he works with and while they're in training here in Arizona, and he would like to do it legally. So he asked if we had any temporary licensure. That was Dr. Holmes, and he may be around for comment. And the other reason is because during this time of COVID-19, we've run into several instances where we could not get some information from a state board because they're not in their state board to give it to us. So that's an instance where perhaps a temporary licensure while they're waiting to get that information would be helpful. So I'm bringing it back to the board just for some guidance and whether this is a type of licensure that you would like to have me see about how to implement.
Okay.
Dr. Holmes comes.
So Dr. Holmes, I believe, is the one that said he would be available by phone if we chose to speak to him.
I think he's on, he would have to speak at call to the public.
Okay.
His specific matter is not on this agenda item.
All right. So as I read through the language, and I have not spent a lot of time looking through this, is there anything in here that says specifically that they are agreeing to practice within the state of Arizona scope of practice? Because there's a pretty diverse, different states have different practice languages, and I mean I would assume that says it in here somewhere.
What is this?
I've read through this statute, Dr. Greeno, and I don't see that, and I think it's a good point. If we were to authorize Dr. Kolash to pursue issuance of a temporary licensure, this 32-3124 is a statewide and does not make allowances for variation in practices between state scopes of practice, and I think the onus of responsibility would be on us to stipulate that they would practice within the scope of practice of chiropractic as defined in the state of Arizona as an additional requirement to this.
How quickly can we administer the jurisprudence exam for a temporary licensure? Can they go online and do that and get results immediately?
Yes.
So that could be a requirement of...
I don't think they have to take that.
No.
Under this.
Yeah.
It's if they meet all of the following requirements, hold the active and unrestricted license in another state, has never had the license revoked or suspended, is not the subject of an unresolved complaint, and has paid any fees. So in
Washington, you can deliver babies. They can come here and do that, but they can't take nasal swabs.
Well, I don't
getting get crazy, man.
But not.
Well, it does say may.
It has to be in your scope of practice here. I agree with
you. Yeah. It says may issue a temporary. It doesn't say will or shall. And so I interpret that to imply that we may do it, but we can place provisions upon it.
Well, not an, we couldn't put extra requirements, like an exam requirement.
Well, but we could require them to practice within the scope of practice in our state.
I would say yes. I would think that would be, if you're going to come to a state and practice, I think you practice within that state's law.
Okay. For the record, we wouldn't be having this problem if we had a chiropractic compact. End of statement.
One of the issues I potentially see with this too is there's not enough language or flexibility for us to deny an application. The way that I read it, it pretty much says if you meet these requirements, we have to approve it, and we're in a similar situation to what we discussed with our normal licensing process. And so what I don't want to see is one get flooded with all these applicants that are now guaranteed this temporary license. So I think we need to dial in those requirements a little bit more. And on top of that, I think if we do consider this, we need to establish some kind of fee. I mean, it's a huge amount of time and effort for staff to review this. And without establishing that first, I think it could be at a loss for our board.
I agree.
And Dr. Knopf, Dr. Greeno, if I may, there is a provision that you can suspend, deny, or revoke if you determine that there's any kind of misrepresentation. So the difference between a temporary license and a permanent license is with a permanent license, there's a lot of background work done to verify information. With the temporary, you're allowing the applicant to basically self-attest that, yes, I meet all these requirements. If you find out later that somebody has had their license suspended in a different state, but they lied, then you can take action on that.
Yeah, and I think
there's a little bit of a some policing that can go on. But you accept their confirmation.
Yeah, point taken. But I think that's where, you know, having thinking through our requirements to earn it is important, because I don't know, you know, within the short amount of time frame that we offer these, would potentially offer these, you know, how much follow-up do we really have on these licensees in the middle of it, say, oh, you know what, you were wrong. I think most would just live through their 30 days, and they would see through their practice in our state. So
you can get
just my concern.
Okay, so this is a general statute that crosses multiple licensing boards, and it's up to us to decide if we are going to give the authority to Dr. Kolash or take these on an individual basis as a board.
Well, first, I think you would decide if it's something you even want to create.
Okay. So it's so right now this is not chiropractic statute in any way. We don't have to follow this.
Correct.
Okay.
You do not have any statute right now that allows a temporary license.
Okay. So we don't have travel to treat like any kind of sports physician.
Not within our statutes. There is a national travel to treat ordinance. I don't know if that's ever come before this board.
Okay. Well, I agree with Dr. Bennett regarding the co-op idea, and there is all kinds of other language floating around, like the national language for the travel to treat that I've seen at the national board and through the Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Boards. And it seems like we are missing a few things out of particular statute, so I'm not real comfortable adopting this one the way that it's written. I feel like that maybe should be on a part of our rulemaking, and we'll have a long list of things to prioritize for GRC. Would that be a statute change?
That would have to be a statute change.
Okay.
And there are several other agencies that have their own temporary license provision.
Okay. But I'm not, not completely, I'm not opposed to this. I think it's a great thing that we've got somebody who is saying, hey, I want to be on the radar. I'm going to be helping people out, and I'm going to do it with my training, and I'm just trying to comply. And if I do that, then I'll have malpractice insurance at the same time. So I'll accept the motion and either direction. Unless there's further.
If you're not going to take action on it, you probably.
Well, we might though. Somebody might want to.
Sure.
Is anybody comfortable making a motion on this today, or we can take no action?
I would just make the motion to take no action on this particular statute and how it's written.
Okay. Second.
If there's no second, then is that the same thing as taking no motion?
It dies.
Yeah, it dies. Comfortable silence for a while.
So is this something we're going to revisit? We just don't like the language of the national travel to treat laws. Is this something we're going to bring up again in the future? Can we table it for future? That's a lot of information.
Absolutely we can. And so we had a motion to take no action and there was no second. So that one died. So I'm going to direct staff to table this discussion and put it on a future agenda for us to consider. I think we all like the idea of it. We're just not real comfortable with what's written in front of us right now.
Thank you.
Okay. So our next item on our agenda is to approve our board meeting minutes. Tab number 13. So we have several months to look at here. And I am going to sure, my internet connection is working right now. And then we'll go through it page by page in just a moment.
Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, let's start with page number 1 of December 4th, 2019.
And then just to remind, if there's any board members that weren't at a particular meeting, abstain from that particular vote.
Hold on just a moment. Okay, I'm looking at page one, page number two of seven, page three. So I'm looking at the formal interview regarding case number 2018-046, Jeffrey Rogers. And underneath it says Dr. Kolesch and Dr. Rogers were sworn in. Did that happen? Were you sworn in for a formal interview? Or I think it would be the two doctors that were
involved.
There was a Dr. Gillen and Dr. Rogers.
And that makes more sense.
Okay.
Nice catch.
All right. And then two sentences underneath that, it says, this happened a couple of times. It just says, we entered into executive session at to obtain. I think it was probably at a certain time should have been inserted there. And then it says to obtain. So maybe just remove the at. Well, I don't have lines on here, so let me see.
I don't either.
So it would be 18 in the Word document. I don't know why those lines didn't go through. But in the Word document, it would be line 18.
Did you find it? So yeah, it's page number 3 of 7 on December 4th of 2019. And I'm about halfway through the page, and it says Dr. Kolesch and Dr. Rogers were sworn in. And then two sentences below that, it says we entered a new executive session at to obtain. So I'm thinking there probably should have been a time inserted there. Maybe it was a template or.
If there's a timestamp in there, I'll insert that. I've highlighted.
Remove the at and we're good.
Either way, okay.
Okay, so I'm going through the next page, which is page number 4 of 7, page 5 of 7.
Page 4, sorry, Dr. Greeno. Page 4, I think it's maybe about line 8, third paragraph down. For record keeping deficiencies, improper billing for the same 305 cases in time period, and alleged unprofessional. Is it alleged ED? Or I wasn't sure about that one. Alleged unprofessional conduct?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Correct. Right here. And so I'll fix that.
Alleged is the S at the end. Alleged unprofessional conduct.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Either way, to allege or alleged.
Okay.
For the record, my name is misspelled by one letter in the line above it. I don't even care, but for the record.
Okay. You don't care about the spelling or that she did all the work?
No, I do. Equo. No, just joking. Totally joking.
Okay. I've noted those also.
Okay.
I think it would be alleged.
Past tense. Okay. Page number 5 of 7. Page number 6 of 7. Okay. And I'm looking at the second paragraph, and when I read it, it just seemed a little bit awkward. It says, motion was made by Dr. Greeno and seconded by Dr. Knopf to enter into executive session. Oh, same thing, at a certain time to obtain. You got that? It's the fifth line down on page 6. So just get rid of the at. It'll say session to obtain legal advice pursuant to. All right, page number 7. Changes. Okay, do I have a motion to accept as amended?
I'll make the motion to accept the minutes as amended for December 4th.
Okay, second by Ms. Powell. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, we're going to go on to... Okay, so we're looking at board meeting minutes now of 127.
From the last draft in this one, and I think it was okay with you, but it was with the motion passed, colon, then the count was put 4-0-0.
What was the inconsistency? What do you mean?
The way your previous minute there, I think that was supposed to be 4-0, and then yet another, the motion passed. I thought that was.
It does look fine the way it is right now to me. I like the way you're doing it.
Yep.
Okay, so page 104. Any corrections? Page 204. Okay, on page 204, I have the same situation about five lines from the bottom. It says we entered a new executive session at to obtain, get rid of the at. And then page 3 of 4. Finally, 4 of 4. Is there a motion to accept as amended?
I'll make a motion to accept January 27th minutes as amended.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, very good. Moving on to February 26th. Page 1 of 6. 2 of 6. 3 of 6. 4 of 6. 5 of 6. 6 of 6.
I'll make the motion to accept the minutes for February 26th.
I second the motion.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll move to March 27th. Page 1 of 1. Okay, it looks like we had one. Oh, we always have one vacancy. Let's, any motion to accept?
Make the motion to accept March 27th minutes.
I second the motion.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, the ayes have it. We're moving on to 4/29 of 2020, and I'm on page 1. See, Dr. Bennett is spelled correctly, page 2.
I'm checking.
Yeah. It's in the middle of the paragraph, says Dr. Bennett, with 2 T's. UN. Okay, page 2, page 3, page 4 of 4.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes as amended for April 29th.
I'll second the motion.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, the ayes have it. We'll go to May 20th. I'm on page 1 of 4. 2 of 4. 3 of 4. 4 of 4.
I will make a motion to adopt the minutes from May 20th.
I second the motion.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So the meeting minutes are approved, and we're moving on to our executive director's report. How long are the licensees required to be here?
3 hours.
Three? We're at 2.5. Okay. You're stuck listening to us approve minutes. But we're done with that part, so it'll get more exciting with the budget report.
The year-to-date actuals are in your packet. What it shows is that at the end of May, we had a surplus of $73,507. As we go through June with the personnel and what we've done, we may have at the end of the fiscal year $50,000 or so that I will negotiate heavily for us trying to retain with my budget analyst. We wouldn't have had that much probably except for my inability to order and approve my own purchases when we didn't have some staff.
Order now before the end of the year.
Yes, we need to have some controls in, and we didn't have enough people to make controls.
Okay, so I'm looking at the chart. Can you tell me, so the appropriation on the top right, $438,000, is that our annual budget?
Yes, for the fiscal year.
And then at the bottom, it says subtotal expenditures,
$365,000.
Okay. So when do we have to submit our next budget request by?
August.
Okay.
And just so I understand, employee-related and personal services, does this also take into account headcount, payroll, or no?
Yes.
Okay. Is that the – which line is that?
So the top two, personal services and employee-related.
Okay. So $6,100. Okay.
So that's personnel, not personnel.
Well, actually, that – I think that's how they actually.
I think it's personal.
Yeah.
Personal.
Although it relates to the personnel.
Personal.
Okay. Do we need to approve the budget report?
I have a question about the budget. Sorry. We've been doing a lot of technology associated, COVID-related technology enhancements. Is that reflected anywhere in this budget?
Not with our board. The state has not. We are struggling with technology infrastructure significantly. The staff do have laptops, and they do work remotely a lot of the time. But they do have to come into the office to do certain tasks that cannot be done remotely. If that answered you, it really wasn't a question, but.
Well, I just know there's been, we've been doing all these remote meetings, and there's technology and costs associated with setting up that infrastructure. I'm just wondering if it's significant and if it should be reflected in the budget, or is it, or where are we on all of it?
So our contract with the asset service, which is the technical support issues for the state, we've been relying on, well, we've been in, involving them heavily, but there's no additional budget impact.
Right. Thank you.
So
okay.
So we do or do not have expenditures in that area?
Oh, it's reflected across the professional and outside services lines.
Okay.
And so depending on the contract, it's once a quarter, once every 6 months or so, they hit our budget for it.
Okay. Does that conclude your report?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. All right. So next on our agenda, we have personnel issues. And I'd like to have a motion to go into executive session for that to discuss Valerie review.
Does Dr. Canafo make a motion to enter into executive session to discuss performance reviews?
I second the motion.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to discuss, Dr. Kolash has been with us for a year now, and we're going to consider, we should vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, any opposed? Okay, so we're officially in executive session at 11:39.
So when you want me or not want me?
I want you for the first part.
And do you want your attorneys in there or
yes.
not?
Security as well.
Yeah.
By the time we do it, thank you.
And Martin, you'll call me. Dr.
Yes.
Kolash.
Yes. Ma'am.
Okay, it is now 12:01 and we are out of executive session and back into regular session. So, do we have Ms. Powell back?
I'm back.
Okay. Anybody like to make a motion?
Yes. I'll make a motion to give Martin Kolasch an increase in salary as we discussed in session.
Okay. Yes.
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? I'll say I think that you've done a great job amongst very, very difficult circumstances. And we feel grateful to have you, and we appreciate all that you've done over the last year.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here. I appreciate all the support you've given me. And from our profession, I thank you all.
I'll call for the question, and those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And are there any opposed? Okay, we have four ayes that agreed on a salary increase. Yep. Okay, so next item on our agenda is our board elections, which we normally hold annually. For chairman and for vice chairman or chairpersons. So at this time, I'll entertain a nomination for chairman.
I would like
Dr.
to. Go ahead,
Angela. You first.
This is Angela Powell, and I would like to nominate Dr. Richard Guarino as chairperson.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to ask if there are any other names put forward, any other nominations? Going once, going twice, going three times. Okay, so I will be your chairman since there. Well, I was the only one. All right, do we need to vote?
By affirmation.
I will nomination into a motion.
Okay. So,
turn the nomination into a motion.
Yes.
I'd like to make the motion to nominate Dr. Richard Guarino to take on as board of chairman of board of examiners.
I will second. This is Dr. Knopf.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay. We have four ayes. And so now for vice chairman, are there any motions to be made for nomination?
This is Dr. Steve Knopf. I'd like to make the motion to nominate Dr. Bennett.
Okay, so we have a nomination for Dr. Bennett. So are there any other nominations? Going once, twice. Three times. Okay, so we have a motion. And is there a second?
A second the motion.
Paul second. Okay, any further discussion? I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it. Are there any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it, and Dr. Bennett, congratulations. You are the new vice chairman. Thank you, Dr. Knopf, for serving as vice chair. So I want to go back to, I see Dr. Schillerstrom in our gallery. Thanks for coming in today. I wanted to give you a chance to talk and let you know we've already heard your tab. And tab number 6, did you want to come up and say anything? Okay. So you can turn on the mic. If you press the button, it'll turn green and introduce yourself.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Hi, I'm Dr. Herb Schillerstrom.
Hi. And so we heard your case today, and we decided to open up another complaint for noncompliance with the board order for not paying the the $5,000 in a timely manner like we had agreed to the terms earlier. So I'll give you a chance to speak, but that's the direction that it went in. And we've read the materials that you've put regarding your financial hardship. So go ahead and say what you would like to say.
Right. Well, I want to apologize to the board for not being here earlier today, but my son is having surgery done at Banner Health, 59th Avenue.
He had sorry for that.
Yeah. So that's the reason I ran late. It wasn't that I was shirking any responsibility to be here or anything. So let's get that cleared, if I could, please. My financial condition, when we had this agreement, in January when I was here, I did show good faith we had an agreement to pay $1,000 a month.
Correct.
I went ahead and made the first payment because things were going well. There wasn't the COVID virus. There was not the shutdown in the country going on. There wasn't the major fear factor out there, which is going on right now. So what has happened? I was not able to meet the rest of the obligations because I've lost about 80% of my practice. Okay, with patients, people are concerned. It's awful hard to practice social distancing to adjust a patient. People are concerned about sanitation in an office. They're also concerned just with everything going on out there in present society today. So if I still owe the $4,000, and it sounds like the board does not want to either reduce this or take any of it away, how am I to do that with my present situation, with the present social situation? Do you want, you know, it's difficult to do this. It really is right now.
Okay. And so earlier when you weren't here, you know, what was discussed was that there was a board order from a year and a half ago that was sent to you by certified mail that I recall that you said you never got.
Neither did my attorney.
And so you owed us $5,000 for a year and a half now. And we created some generous payment terms for you to pay $1,000 a month starting in February, which you paid the first $1,000. It is up to you to pay any way that you can, but you are now past the window of your final payment was due earlier this month. And so now you are in violation of a board order when we made the second set of terms for you to give you the payment plan. And so I don't know, you could have paid with a credit card, you could have paid any way you wanted to, but you did not. And I understand these are hard times, but the fact is now that you have missed the window to make those payments, and this has now been forwarded to a new complaint for violating a board order where your license could be revoked. And so you will be invited back here when we revisit this again for that case.
If you can't pay, you can't pay. And due to social issues out there, what's occurring, something that's always bothered me and my attorney, when we had the initial hearing, there was the factor of I doing continuing education. That was stated that I would have to follow up and do. But there was never any mention of any fine whatsoever at the final hearing. And I've never understood when I left there, why wasn't there, and you can check the minutes, why wasn't the issue of the $5,000 fine imposed on me at the actual hearing? Education requirements were imposed. And I followed up and I did those in good faith. I've tried to follow up here in good faith and do this, but due to socioeconomic unrest out there and what is occurring in society, you know, you can't be in a bubble and not understand what is going on. Everything I've stated in this letter is 100% true and can be backed up and verified. You know, money doesn't grow on trees. And when you have things going on that's in our society right now, you know, this whole country again could be shut down in another month.
Okay, so I appreciate your testimony today, and I appreciate you sitting and waiting, you know, to have this moment to speak. All I can tell you is if it were me, I would have paid my licensing fee before I would have paid other things, because I value my license because that is the way that I make my money and that is the way that I can serve my patients. And you chose not to do that. And so I'm telling you what we've decided today is that it will come back in another meeting for noncompliance, and there will be another case assigned to that.
Well, I'm going to start sending money in every month. So in case this matter goes to another forum, I will show good diligence in what I'm doing. But there's just no way I can pay $1,000 a month. I'll go ahead and start in sending in some type of payment then. You know, if you were in my situation, would you wind up paying $100 a month, $200 a month, $300 a month, whatever you could afford till things get back where they're at in society? Or how would you handle that?
I can't begin to put myself in your shoes, and so you've got some decisions to make.
Well, I showed good faith. I submitted the first payment of $1,000, so I showed good faith in doing that. I can't help it. It's a force majeure, which is an act of God. And when acts of God occur, you know, it's beyond us. And the COVID is an act of God.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today.
And thank you for hearing me. And I'll see what I can do with the matter. Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, so
we are to our call to the public. Dr. Holmes is on the Google meeting or not on the Google meeting?
Yes, I'm on.
Hi, Dr. Holmes. So this is the point in where I call to the public. And if you were here in the room, you would see there's nobody of the public in person. But telephonically and through the Google meeting, you can say whatever you like right now. You can comment about how we ran our board meeting, whether you liked it, you didn't like it, or any other topic that you would like to discuss. But we cannot answer you. We cannot. This is not a dialogue back and forth, and so this is your turn to tell us what you would like to say.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. I guess I don't know if you can answer this question, but would you like me to be on video as well?
I'd love to see you.
All right. I think I should be up there. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the board allowing me to speak, first of all. And I want to say also that I agree with all of your guys' praise of Dr. Kolash. He has been very, very wonderful to work with, trying to figure all this out for me, and then also Ms. Shapiro as well. So I wanted to start out and just kind of say who I am and what I'm attempting to do. My name is Dr. David Holmes, and I am contracted with a group within the military that's based out of North Carolina. I'm also licensed in North Carolina and work with them there. They will be traveling, to Arizona in September for temporary training. I'm looking to try and get a temporary license in Arizona, as the travel retreat right now isn't available there. And as of right now, I'm unaware of there being, according to the earlier meeting here, a formalized temporary license. Earlier, when you guys were talking about the temporary license, you brought up some good points about the scope of practice within Arizona, wanting to make sure that it is the doctors abide by the scope of practice. I have done temporary licenses in other states for this exact reason. We're training with the military. Missouri is one of them. And when I got my temporary license in Missouri, they required me to take a jurisprudence, just so I was able to understand my scope of practice within their state. They were also very good, and they expedited it for me because the military does what they want when they want, so they kind of don't give us all that much notice. And so one of the things I also wanted to point out is when it comes to knowing and the differences in states when it comes to the scope of practice, I am licensed in 8 states. Like I said, North Carolina, obviously, but also 3 states in which Arizona has reciprocity with, so Minnesota, Ohio, and Colorado as well. I do my due diligence in everything when it comes to knowing which what the rules are on each state I practice, obviously, because that is on me, right? Knowing the scope of practice and doing what I need to do for my people in that state. What I was trying to ask of the board is if there is a way that we could create some sort of temporary license that perhaps in the interim before it is put forth to a formalized meeting and all of the rules are put together for it, that if we could put together some sort of temporary license that would be on a case-by-case basis and non-fee-based. It is my understanding that if it is put forth as a non-fee type of rule or a non-fee type of entity, that there would be the ability to potentially do a one-off or case-by-case basis, which would then allow me to obviously legally treat in Arizona. But then it would also allow you guys to put forth whatever stipulations you wanted on it. I know you talked about you wanted to make sure that you could not just have a whole bunch of people coming in and have it be a will issue, rather have it be a may issue. And so that would also allow you the ability to do other things like put the jurisprudence on, which I have no problem taking. And so I don't know, obviously it's a little different for me, sorry, talking to people who cannot respond back to me, so I apologize about this. But like I said, I'm asking for a creation of a temporary license that would be a non-fee based to allow Dr. Kolash or whoever it may be to grant temporary licenses while the permanent rules and regulations for it are being established. And then I would do what I needed to do when it comes to jurisprudence or any fees that are associated with it to be allowed to come in. I believe one other thing I wanted to point out, you guys were talking about the travel to treat. I heard that you were talking positively about it. When and if you guys do choose to adopt some sort of travel to treat, I would recommend that there be some sort of language in there for chiropractors who work with the military as well. Chiropractic as of right now is not an enlisted entity within the military. It's supposed to be, but that has not come about. And so, therefore, any chiropractor is either going to be a GS worker or going to be a contractor of the military, and then would be in the same type of situation as a healthcare providers for professional sports or any type of sport that travels across state borders. So I just wanted to point out that that might be a good thing to look at as well in the travel to treat language. Barring that, I think that is about all I have to say. I would just like to see if there's some way that we could create a a kind of a temporary license that is going to be utilized for a case-by-case basis in the interim here before you guys are able to come up with the exact knowledge, or excuse me, the exact language for it being permanent in the future. I believe that is all I have to say. So again, I want to say thank you to the board for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody else for the call to the public? Okay, then I will take a final motion to adjourn.
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thanks, everybody. And thank you, Ms. Williams, for your help, and welcome, Ms. Khan. Okay.
Dr. Kalish, I wish to report a theft of state property. I have a confession. Now I wish to open a complaint. I just didn't want to turn my computer back in someday and not have a charge cord with it. All right, I trust you.
You're welcome to lunch supply.
Oh, man, and does it smell good? Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.